It's the Great Debate.
It sure is.
Podcast radio show.
What a good time we're about to have. I would like to congratulate everyone on a successful Valentine's Day, which was yesterday.
Very successful. Or 2 days ago, depending on when you're listening, whatever.
There's a little bit of time travel that happens when you prepare a podcast episode.
That's right.
Anyway, we'd like to address some topics that are somewhat like romantic and thematically.
Romantic hearts surrounding issues around the human heart.
Mm-hmm.
A cardiology episode,
crushes,
if you will.
Pretty girls, that kind of thing,
right? Oh, that stuff is
cute
the
boys.
Best.
Sure.
Yeah.
I got a top. I got a micro.
Let's go.
I got a micro debate. This is a listener top submitted by listener Dustin F.
Thanks, Dustin.
Dustin, thanks for submitting this excellent top.
If you're a listener and you send in a top and we use it, it's on you to send me your address so we can get you a Great Debates t-shirt.
Yeah,
that's true. Your responsibility.
Jeez. You make it sound
social contract.
Wow.
Well, like sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't get my shirt. Hey, I don't have your address, buddy.
Bro.
Send it to GreatDebate16.
I can't email you a shirt, man.
I wish I could.
It'd be easier. Micro debate.
Yeah.
3 minutes on the clock.
Okay.
Thank you, listener Dustin. Steve Healy taking the pro.
Yes.
Rachel was the main character of Friends.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. How does the journey, the 12 or however many season long journey that is Friends, begin?
Come on, man.
Rachel, in a wedding dress, runs into Central Perk. She's run away from her wedding. She needs the help of her friends. It's the story of someone who's in a romantic crossroads. And how does the series Friends end? She finally resumes her relationship with the guy who's probably the love of her life, Ross. Friends,
probably.
They've gone through ups and downs and everything, and now they're finally going to get back together.
Mm-hmm.
They were on a break. They weren't on a break. So that is the story of Friends. It's the story of Rachel. It's how she got from this person who ran away from her own wedding to a person finally ready for a stable relationship. And as soon as she's there, emotionally, the show is over and Friends can move on. The friends have served their purpose. The show should be called Rachel's Friends, I think.
The show Friends is about the six of them. It's an ensemble comedy. It's almost the definition of an ensemble comedy. Are they equally weighted as characters in terms of what is the center of the show? No. But to say that Rachel's the main character of Friends is an absolute disservice to the other five characters, not actors, but characters on the show who, if you took one of them away, the show would collapse. I would say that if you had to identify a central character of the show, it is not Rachel, it is Ross and Rachel's relationship. And there's a key piece of information here, which is that Ross and Monica are brother and sister, and because of that extra little bond, I would actually say that it just barely shifts the quote-unquote main character of the show slightly towards Ross.
Very terrible mistake. Because it's not called Brothers and Sisters, it's called Friends. Who's Rachel's friend? Courtney Cox's character, Monica.
The idea that brothers
friends,
and sisters can't
friends.
Be friends
You're
is
friends.
Absurd.
Okay, but they're friends, yeah.
Yes, Ross and Rachel, Ross and Monica are friends because brothers and sisters
Rachel,
are friends.
The friends are Rachel's friends.
The friends are Rachel's friends, but they're also Ross's friends.
They're going to help Rachel get to a place where she's capable of being in a relationship.
Same with Ross.
No, Ross is pretty much ready to go at the beginning of Friends. He's been in love with Rachel since he was a little kid.
What a horrible Friends historian you are.
No,
at the beginning of Friends, he's getting out of a relationship with a woman who's just become a lesbian. He's got a son.
But we will later learn that he's been in love with Rachel this whole time since they were little kids. Adina, what do you think?
Ugh, I don't know. Good one. Fine.
Wait.
I got off to a strong start and I never let it go.
I think you got off to a great start. I think Dave made the kind of case that you're supposed to make in this.
Predictable.
I liked your beautiful opening statement.
I think we have to consider extending micros to like 4 minutes.
I feel like
we're
short.
Just about getting into it. Not necessarily. Cool. I'm not saying I want to put another minute on the clock. I did lose that. I'll admit that. But
yes.
I feel like we could have dug a little further.
But, yeah, I mean, there's always more room to explore. Especially with a body of work as rich as Friends.
Mm, right.
How was everyone's Valentine's Day? You have a good one?
Well, Healy, we haven't, you know, we haven't had it yet. We already established that we're recording this before Valentine's Day.
Are we into host chat?
Yes, that we are into. Right, that cool. You could say.
As Valentine's Day approaches, where are your thoughts turning? To Donut, your dog? Mm,
absolutely. Yeah. Mm. My girlfriend, my dog, my loved ones, my friends, my friends, my sister, who I consider a friend, much like Ross and Rachel. Ross and, wait, Monica. It's Monica? Yeah. I forget their names sometimes. Mm,
big Friends fan over here.
The Gellers. I was a big Friends fan.
Both of you forgot Monica's name, for what it's worth.
That's true. We did, but I kind of thought I'd gotten away with it, but I guess not. So you remember the Amazon Kindle? When the Amazon Kindle first came out, I remember thinking, this is going to lead to a boom in erotica.
Oh, okay.
Because all of a sudden you can read on the subway or whatever without people seeing the cover of the book that you're reading.
That's a great call.
And I was remembering this observation recently, and I did a little dive into Amazon to see what are the best-selling Kindle eroticas. And it's a rich world because pretty much anybody can write their Kindle erotica and get it in there. It's like
self-published erotica.
Self-published, up for grabs, open marketplace. Okay. And I thought maybe I could learn something about what women are into, what men are into, from looking at what are popular Kindle eroticas. As of right now, this is the number one most popular Kindle paid erotica on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's called Untouched, and it's by Alexa Riley. And here's the plot. When Alexander buys the land for his new airstrip, he never imagines the home on it is still occupied.
He didn't?
But after he lays eyes on Liliana, he decides she's his property now.
Whoa.
18-year-old Liliana has been tucked away her whole life. After her grandmother dies, she's left alone with only her romance books to keep her company. She's been surrounded by females her whole life, but when Alexander walks in the door, she knows he's there to save her.
And build an airstrip.
He's claiming her, no matter how untouched she is.
Disgusting.
Will Liliana fight or let Alexander have her way?
Oh, God.
Will Alexander keep her locked away or set her free? Will there be enough steam in this book to start your own sauna?
What?
Only one way to find out.
Not an airplane metaphor?
Okay, then at the bottom there's a warning.
Okay, what does the warning say?
Warning. Are we still doing these? This is Alexa Riley. You should know the drill by now. This is going to be over the top dirty with all the sticky bits you like. Get in here already.
Oh, God.
That's number one.
That is really unappealing.
How are we supposed to react to that?
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Thomas, what's your takeaway?
Couple of takeaways.
Yeah.
He didn't know there was someone living in the house on the property.
There's a realtor that is responsible for this.
Someone dropped the ball. Someone dropped the ball.
Some mistakes were made in the due diligence process.
Is it steamy enough to power your own sauna?
Sauna's a dry heat.
That's really funny.
That's also going on. And then also the whole thing feels very... I mean, the description of her is like a possession.
I'm going to tell you, if you read about erotica, possession, dominance, owning...
Interesting.
Power, taking, contracts, owning. That's all over the place. Yeah.
I mean, it's sexy stuff.
I think this one was a little nicer. This is number two.
Can we call this segment Healy Shades of Gray?
Sure, whatever.
Okay, great.
The number two most popular paid Kindle erotica, or actually this looks like a free one, Sweet Valentine by Aria Cole.
Thematic.
Three things sum up Valentine Marsden at this moment.
Hair strips.
She's got a sweet tooth so deep she opened her own bakery. She hates the holiday that is her namesake. And she might just be charged with murder tomorrow morning when she strangles the contractor next door banging on the walls during the busiest week of the year. Valentine finds herself bumping into the completely sexy and totally cocky stranger more and more often. So often she's beginning to think he's a working man with a serious sweet tooth. Ford Knox has spent almost 20 years secluding himself from the public, retreating to his mountain cabin after work every day without a second thought for complicated things like women and relationships. But when the syrupy, sweet, and dangerously curvy bakery owner next door seems to fall right into his lap this Valentine's Day, he winds up drunk on her and desperate for more. Knox is a real man with a wicked appetite, and Valentine is the only thing he can see.
Come on.
Warning. Yeah. Sweet Valentine is a cocky, blue-collar, alpha goodness with a dash of sweet candy hearts, lush chocolate-dipped strawberries, and sawdust-scented first kisses. Grab a chocolate martini because Knox and Valentine are about to melt your insides.
What am I being warned about?
You're being warned that it's going to be too sweet and wonderful.
I feel like these aren't official warnings.
I feel like they're playing fast ratings. And loose with the warnings.
Yeah, they really are.
Look, we didn't come here to read erotica plot summaries.
Can I just say, when you said, at one point in there, you said he meets a guy more and more often. Uh-huh. And I thought what you said was a man's name, which was he meets a man Warren more often. And I was like,
no, his name is not something ridiculous like Warren more often.
It's Ford Knox.
It's Ford Knox.
Wow. But she killed the con. She strangled the contractor.
No, I think that was just a little joke that she was mad at him for banging all the time. I thought that we were going to go there too. There's plenty of murder in the erotica if you're looking for that.
That was really interesting. I don't think you have a future narrating these books. It wasn't like, you know.
It was a little matter of fact, I suppose.
But it was cool.
I wonder, do you want a man to narrate it or a woman if you're getting an erotic audiobook?
I don't know. I imagine. Okay.
Guys, let's continue with the post-Valentine's Day fun times.
Please.
I have a topic.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Healy's going to take the pro.
All right.
It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Topic is...
Yes.
Donut loves Dave.
Okay.
This is cruel.
I'm Steve. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Donut is a tiny little dog. Instagram handle at Donut in the City. You can follow it. It's Dave's dog. Dave and his girlfriend Esther's dog. It's a tiny little dog and it has a cute little face. And it's a puppy. It's less than a year old. And the fact of the matter is, the dog loves Dave. Now, we're going to have to take a second here and define love. What is love? Love is when you have a feeling of joy for someone else that's not purely transactional. I think we have to agree that it can't be, if to be pure love, it can't just be a transactional relationship. Although even that actually could be up to debate. I don't see why love couldn't just be a word for a heightened level of transactional relationship. But no matter what, Donut expresses physical affection for Dave, looks at Dave with affectionate eyes, is happy when Dave comes home, wants to be around Dave, wants to physically cuddle with Dave. Dave is important in Donut's life. Donut loves Dave. There's a love relationship between the dog and the human. And I think Donut loves Dave.
Okay, so obviously I'm the victim of a cruel prank here. You guys have set this up so that I have to argue that Donut doesn't love me. And you guys think it's really funny because you know how important she is to me. And it breaks my heart to argue this. And it does. But I'll play along. Donut doesn't love me yet. Donut and I have only lived together for about 4 months.
Love at first sight.
One of the things you say, a lot of information, Healy, that isn't accurate. One of them you said is that Donut loves to cuddle with me. Not so. It's a little difficult to get her to cuddle with me, and often when I try to get her to cuddle with me, she growls at me. That is not what someone who loves you does when you try to show physical affection. Is she happy to see me when I get home? Yes, absolutely. But she's also happy to see everyone, and she's probably a little bit more happy to see Esther when Esther comes home than she is to see me. Do we have some kind of bond? Yes. But can there even be love between a human and a dog? Of that, I'm not sure. I know that I love Donut, absolutely. But is Donut's brain capable of loving me? I don't think so. Donut, yes. Do I provide for it? Do I give it comfort? Do I give it shelter and food and all of the necessities? And on top of that, do we have some of the sort of intangible more poetic things together? Do we have fun and play? And is there an almost indescribable bond between us that almost defies logic and everything I heretofore believed in? Yes, absolutely. That is the case. Would I call it love? No. She doesn't know what love is. She does not love me.
Okay, I'm going to, unusually for me, very methodically and carefully destroy your arguments. Your first argument was that Donut sometimes growls when you pick her up and try and cuddle with her.
Yes.
Okay,
often,
fine.
Often.
Imagine a couple that's been married for 50 years. They don't always want to cuddle. Sometimes the wife is not into it. She's like, no, not until you take a shower. That's essentially what Donut is doing to you. She's just not into it at that moment.
Oh, but you're... Dave? Just because you're choosing to compare it to a couple that's in love,
I know we're in free skate, but give me a little time here, will you?
That she loves me.
I'd ask you to just, out of love for me in our debate, just give me a little time to destroy your arguments.
But that same behavior could be exhibited between a girl who's on a first date with a guy who wants to, like, just because...
Okay, yeah, so let's just throw growling out. Growling's irrelevant. No. It doesn't. Sometimes she doesn't want to cuddle with you. That doesn't mean she doesn't love you.
But someone next point, who does love me doesn't growl at me when I try to cuddle with her.
No, but that's her way of... I mean, Esther loves you. I bet she doesn't always want to cuddle with you, right? Sometimes she's like, I'm not into this right now. Back off. That's essentially what Donut
is doing.
That's
a little too personal question. I'm not answering that.
I didn't ask you to answer it. I'm telling you. Next point, sometimes Donut is more happy to see Esther than to see you. I never said Donut doesn't love Esther more than you, or even hundreds of people more than you. I'm just saying Donut
seems uncalled for.
Donut does love you. That's a fact. She does love you. So she can love Esther more. Fine. I don't care. Doesn't matter. We're talking about you. The relationship on the table here is you and Donut.
Okay.
Next, I can't really... you admitted that you and Donut have a bond, which I agree. And then you got to Donut's brain. That was really, I think, your strongest place to take a stand, whether Donut's brain is capable of loving you. And I was really disappointed that you didn't make more out of this argument, because love does not... If there's one thing we know about love, it doesn't come from the brain. Smart people aren't better at love than dumb people. Adults with fully formed brains aren't better at love than children. Even babies without fully formed brains can love. Love comes from something other than the brain. We call it the heart. It obviously doesn't come from the physical heart, or at least we don't think so. There's no scientific evidence of that, but there's a reason why we use the heart as a metaphor for love instead of the brain, because love and the intellect are separate. Smart people get themselves into love relationships all the time that aren't logical and make no sense or even detrimental to their health. People's love overrides their brain all the time. Donut's level of intelligence is irrelevant to whether or not she can love. She is a functioning animal. She's capable of expressing... I think if you look in her eyes, you can tell she's capable of expressing some kind of feeling and some kind of passion. So I say that is a crazy argument. Your strongest argument is flawed, and I've destroyed you.
I can't believe you're going to hand me this debate by saying that love doesn't come from the brain. It's a totally different point to say that love and intellect aren't correlated. I agree with you on that. Smart people aren't more capable of love than unintelligent people. But Healy, of course love comes from the brain. Everything that we feel and see in all of our senses in one way or another go through the brain. Namely, the emotional centers of our brain, in part the amygdala, parts that are far more advanced in humans than they are in animals like dogs, like Donut. Of course it comes from the brain. You would say that, like, oh, even babies are capable of love, but I would say to you that, like, a person who is born essentially like brain dead is actually not capable of love, because they're not able to, like, interact with the world around them, and they're not able to form their brains aren't capable of emotional response in any way. So you're right, it's not about intelligence, that's not what I'm saying at all, but it is about the emotional responses that we have in our brain. It's about the senses and the way we process them, and of course all of those things go through the brain. Like, you're understanding, you're giving us a sort of like ancient Egyptians understanding of the way the human body works, if you believe that the brain doesn't have any part in how we perceive the world around us and whether or not we love someone. I mean, I can't believe how backwards you're giving us.
Strong rebuttal. I'm going to concede that, yeah, the brain does play a role in love. But, you know, you mentioned the ancient Egyptian. And
I did.
And yeah. I think that actually, like, when it comes to love, that kind of mystical, magical thinking is going to lead us to more truth than your scientific thinking. Donut's brain is formed enough for her to have emotional reactions. She can be sad. She can be happy. She can be nervous. She can be afraid. All that's being processed through her brain. True.
That's right.
But ultimately, there is a... I think her brain... Since her, we know that her brain is capable of having emotions, I believe it's capable of having love. And it's capable of having love for you, who obviously shows love for her, who provides for her, who takes care of her, who has a nurturing quality, who spent a lot of time with her. She is capable of love.
Yeah, but the difference between being sad and being sad, hungry, nervous, all of those things, and being loving of someone or loving, is that love is a human construct. All of those things, being sad, being hungry, being anxious, all of those things are basically dog versions of instincts. Being anxious is no different than just being like, it's basically a slightly more evolved version of like being afraid that you're going to die.
Do you think
being sad is just a slightly evolved version of like desiring the comfort that your mother, your primary caregiver gives you and feeling alone in the moment?
Do you think
feeling love does not actually have a sort of like instinctual, like most primal root? It is the thing that some would say actually defines us as human beings and separates us from our animal ancestors.
Do you think dogs are capable of love? Do you think any dog is capable of love?
No, I don't.
But you don't think any dog.
I remain agnostic about dog love, but I'll say that if Donut is capable of dog love, she doesn't love me yet. And I'm going to go to move to my final.
Wait. Do you think dogs are capable of love?
Let's start there. If any dog is capable of it,
you don't know. You don't even know.
I have to give that to you. That's right. I'm agnostic.
Oh, okay. So you think if any dog is capable of love, Donut is capable of love?
Well, yes. I think it's possible. I have to say that, yes.
Love capable dog imaginable.
Can I move to my final argument?
I guess if you want to get out of here, as I would if I were you.
Ooh. Let's just have typical closing statements.
Okay, close
the clock is running out, Healy. I'm trying to move this along.
Fine.
The truth is, Healy, that all of my arguments to this point have just been a facade. I don't really believe any of this. The truth is that what Donut and Esther and I share transcends love on such an unimaginable plane and dimension that I can't even truly put it into words. And to call it love is to demean what the three of us have together. I believe that what Donut and Esther and I experience in this home is more akin to the relationship of, yes, dare I say it, the Holy Trinity, where the three of us are inseparable, and to say that we are basically each a part of each other. Donut is a part of my soul, as am I part of hers. And to say that she loves me is to vastly underestimate and to illegitimize what we actually experience on a daily basis.
I know what you think you just said is deeply profound, and it is kind of interesting, but in a way it's just kind of sad that you're only just now getting to a basic human understanding of what love is. And to those of us who are raised Catholic and know about the Holy Trinity, we've had this great metaphor growing up. You're just now coming with Donut and Esther to understand that kind of love and the spiritual love that transcends understanding. And I'm happy for you that you're experiencing it. And I'm glad that you've conceded that Donut loves you.
I don't think I did. But anyway, Medina?
Dave, you did a great job.
Thank you. Did I win?
Yeah.
Yes.
Healy's fuming.
Yeah, I'm pissed.
Why?
I don't think Dave debated in good faith. I think
what he
absolutely. He was given a very difficult assignment, and he made incredible arguments. No, at the end, he just stole. He made your argument better than you could.
No, he refused to debate the topic. He refused to take on. He should have
totally
hit hard.
Untrue.
Man, what a sore loser, dude.
Oh, bummer, Dave.
I don't mean
bro.
To be a sore loser, but I think that Dave. I didn't like it.
Also, like when you tried to quote unquote destroy him point by point, I thought that was pretty weak. Like your actual arguments about that were not that great. And then we got into some bickering that wasn't that cute. And like really the best arguments in the debate were Dave's. And I think that the listeners are going to side with me.
Hey, if you thought we had a good debate, then we all won.
And by the way, it was a spectacular debate. Healy, you had a wonderful moment there where you talked about how love comes from a metaphorical place called the heart, or what we call the heart. But then the mistake you made was you took on this guy who's been a lifetime student of the psychology and the study of the mind, and he really took you to task there.
Mm.
And I thought it was impressive and good, and so I sided with Dave.
Hey, I'm happy with a good debate.
Me too, really.
Here's what I want to say as we close out this Valentine's Day episode. Yeah. I love you guys.
Oh, I love our listeners.
Happy Valentine's Day. Well, Healy's mad at me right now.
Wait, Medina, Medina, did you mean that you love me and Steve, or that you love our listeners?
You guys.
See, that was interesting, because that's how I interpreted it, and I was about to say, I love you too, Medina, and Healy was like, I love our listeners.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that. I thought Medina was saying, I love you, meaning the listeners and everybody who makes great debate
you're
possible.
You're the one who's incapable of receiving love, as it turns out.
For right now, I want to wish you both a happy Valentine's Day. Tell you that I love you both.
Steve, I love you.
I mean, I don't think you're talking to me in a spirit of love right now.
No, I'm not, but I can still love you without talking to you in the moment in the spirit of love.
I'm going
to
say I love both of you guys.
I do too.
But at the moment, my heart is full of love for the people who listen to the Great Debate podcast.
I
don't know who they are. I don't know where you are.
Yeah.
I love you guys. Yeah. I'm glad you listened to this. Yeah. I hope you had a good Valentine's Day.
And I think it's worth saying that when we get communication from you in the form of email and tweets, and when you like our Instagram posts and whatnot, we feel the love coming back, and it warms our hearts.
It's like a little Valentine's.
Every day. Yes. A little Valentine every day.
Yeah. It's like one of those little candy hearts.
On that note, guys, we're going to close out this episode, but please write to us, tweet at us. We're Great Debate 69 everywhere. We look forward to hearing from you. I hope you had a great Valentine's Day. We'll see you next week. The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.